From Studio 22, you're listening to Servcast with your hosts William Lamb and Tyler Shores. Servcast is dedicated to challenging those who have a desire to serve, lead, and make the world a better place through the love of Jesus Christ. And now, here's William and Tyler.
Welcome back to Servcast. My name's Tyler, and we're so glad you're joining us today. Following his chapel address, Lee Lum and Foundry Ministry CEO Micah Andrews sat down with William to talk about calling and service. If you'd like to see Micah's full chapel address, you can follow the link that's in the show notes. But the conversation that William had with him is coming up next.
Hey, welcome to Servcast in Studio 22. We're glad you joined us again today. My guest is Micah Andrews. Hey, Micah.
Good to see you guys.
We're glad you're with us today. Now, you're a Lee alum, is that correct?
That is correct.
Good deal. When were you here?
I was at Lee from 1991 to 1996.
You're an old guy.
I took two junior years. Yeah. I loved it so much. but was here from 91 to 96. I was a sociology major.
Okay.
Really wasn't sure where that was going to go in life. Really enjoyed my time here at Lee.
Yeah. Well, recently you were in the chapel at Lee University, and so this podcast episode with you today is just kind of a follow-up to that chapel, and you know we'll post on our notes for folks that might want to go grab the whole talk. So we're just going to kind of unpack some of the discussion and things that you talked about. And right now, currently, you are the executive director of the Foundry in Alabama, right?
That is correct.
What is the Foundry?
The Foundry Ministries, really five locations, but we serve central Alabama is the best way to kind of give a snapshot of that, primarily in the Birmingham area, and then areas north and south of Birmingham as well.
Mm-hmm. So now the clientele that you serve, the folks that you care for, can they come from anywhere? Are they restricted to the Alabama region, or how does that work?
No, we have residents that come to our recovery program specifically. Mm-hmm. In the last 5 years, from 31 different states.
Wow.
And from two foreign countries. So it's really a draw from primarily regionally in the southeast, but as far away as from Alaska, folks have come to our recovery program.
Now, a Lee grad and a past youth pastor, and I think I heard you say earlier that you wanted to be the oldest youth pastor in the world.
That's right.
But yet you changed to a different type of role in ministry. How did that happen? What happened with that?
Well, it really goes back all the way to my Lee days. Being a sociology major, I had an internship or a practicum that was required my senior year. And randomly, maybe by design as well, I was placed in a faith-based recovery program serving as an intern during my senior year. And then subsequently went to be a youth pastor who our church also sponsored a substance abuse recovery program that I just came really close to. And I think it was kind of the way I was designed and kind of hardwired for those that were down, out, broken, busted, and bruised. And so during that time, I really never thought I would leave youth ministry. And then obviously as the Lord and I kind of worked things through transitions, ended up in the Foundry.
But actually, I don't know if you left youth ministry per se, maybe the traditional form, because you're still touching a lot of young people, right?
That's right. And the funny thing is about that, my oldest daughter, the very first night, we have a chapel service on Thursday nights and Sunday mornings, very similar to Lee, that's required attendance, right? And my very first night, my daughter's sitting there, and she looks at me, and she says, "This is like youth group for old people." And I thought, you know what? She's got some insight there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So let me ask you a couple of questions that I think would be digging in a little bit deeper to what you talked about today. And just briefly a moment ago, you mentioned that when you were at Lee, you were involved in a practicum at a care facility. So what would you say to students today in ways in which they can, you know, focus in to make sure they learn more than just the theory? You know, the theory is great and the theory drives what we do as a general rule, but how do they dig into learning the practical steps necessary to be able to be ready for what God might open up for you to be able to do that you didn't even know was coming?
Yeah. I think the number one thing is just find places to engage.
Okay.
For me personally, when I was at Lee, had that not been a requirement, I probably was not at a place in my own life and maturity that I would have sought that. I think times are different now, and so there are a lot more opportunities to volunteer and connect with nonprofits, with churches, with organizations that are making a difference. I know Lee actually has a day that's kind of designed for that purpose. Mm-hmm. And so my advice to students and all people, be engaged in the world that we live in, because we have a voice, mm-hmm. we have abilities, we have gifts that I believe the world needs.
Mm-hmm. In your talk about being a Boy Scout, you talked about the day that you won the orienteering competition, basically, and you listed some markers in life, and you kind of identified several of those. So how do we learn from those markers, both good and bad? We know we have the situation, the circumstance, this event that occurs. It is a marker, and it could be good or bad. Practically, how do we learn from those without so easily being frustrated by that experience?
Yeah, well, some of the things that I did not go into today are what I kind of refer to as my own scar stories. And so there are a lot of things that I think shape us. As a youth minister, I use this phrase a lot with our students that you show me your five closest friends and I'll show you your future.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think it just applies to students and teens, but the reality is the people that I surround myself with influence and impact me. As much as the scenarios and the situations direct and guide our mm-hmm. lives. And so I think just the culmination of all of those experiences lead us really to the purpose in our life. And so being aware of those things, to me, that's what's important.
You talked about a day in January when you went to Dauphin Beach, mm-hmm. And it was a moment between, with you and God, with nobody else around. You were kind of in this journey between what you had been doing, maybe felt an original call to do, and to now what God was shifting. So what advice might you give to people that are trying to figure out how can they really enter that calling that God's got for them versus living out the expectations that somebody else places on them? That's a hard decision.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a preacher's kid too, and when you've learned something of style and behavior and activity, but yet that's not really the road you're going to head down. How do you make sense of all of that, Micah?
I think one of the things that, and again from my own experience, was not being afraid of seasons. That understanding and appreciating the fact that there were seasons of a call. That call looks different later in life than it did early in life, as opposed to this temptation to think I've forsaken a call mm-hmm. to go do something different.
Oh.
And that was there was a pivotal moment where I actually went and met with my dad, who's a pastor, and I sat down and I explained to him, this is where I think I'm supposed to be heading in life. And we were at a restaurant in Birmingham, Alabama, and he put his hand on my shoulder and he said, it's okay. And so I think just understanding and realizing that ministry comes in many different forms mm-hmm. Was okay for me to realize and understand, and really was the catalyst and the catapult for me to move forward into where I'm at and what I get to do today.
Mm-hmm. And now I kind of get a sense, Micah, that you're the older guy in the mix who's putting his hand on the shoulder of the younger guy and saying, hey, it's going to be okay. So mm-hmm. how can we as seasoned leaders get to that place where we really have to be willing to say it's okay? So what steps have you learned kind of moving from that role of, hey, I need somebody to say it's okay to me, to now, man, I really need to tell these people it's okay. How do we get to that level? What advice do you have for the gray hairs like you and me that need to be able to move to that level of affirming, folks in their call, even though it might not be what we think?
And oddly enough, I find myself in that situation, in that scenario, more often than I ever imagined I would be.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of that comes with experience. I think a lot of that comes with, to me, that's part of the calling for me, that when someone walks into my life looking for that direction, it's not just tell them my story, mm-hmm. but to be able to engage in their life, mm-hmm. to coach with them and to walk them through certain aspects of their journey. Even though their past's not going to look exactly like mine, but for me, it was really understanding that I didn't have to have it all figured out to be involved in the process. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is I didn't have to have my life's work behind me in order to pull someone else along the journey. And it was almost like, let's grow together. I might be two or three steps ahead of you, but it's because I'm older, right?
Sure.
But let's make this kind of transformation and transition maybe together.
And I think that's a key word because, you know, with transition comes an opportunity for transformation. And if we're not willing to, you know, I tell people all the time that a curve in the road is not the end of the road unless you fail to make the curve. You know, and so for some people, it's a matter of saying, you know what, maybe getting up to this point wasn't really as good for you or as, you know, where you felt like you needed to be, but it's not the end. Let's go forward with that. So in your talk this at chapel recently, you mentioned this idea that you heard from God. Now, that gets a little weird for some people. Let me just talk about that, because when I hear somebody say, well, hey, God spoke to me. Okay, are you serious? So I want to ask, did he email you? Did he text you? Did he write it on the wall? Did you find a, you know, rock on the beach side, you know, or a piece of you know, shell that was on Dauphin Beach that where God just kind of wrote it in the Sharpie of his finger? I don't know. So talk to us for just a minute about ways in which God does speak and how can we hear God when he's speaking to us? Because obviously, you know, you've been through some encounters in your faith walk where you really know undeniably that God has orchestrated, designed, implemented, given you opportunities of intersection for, you know, the good cause of affecting people. How do you hear from God? And help us unpack that for a minute.
Yeah, I think for me personally, I didn't know that I was hearing from God until much later. I thought that, okay, this...
Hold on a minute. Say that again, because I think I want people to really grab that. Say that again, Micah.
I did not realize that I had was hearing from God until much later in the process. Because literally how that moment played out, I say moment, I mean it was a matter of hours that I sat and literally had a one-on-one conversation with God where I was doing all the talking. I was hoping and my faith said he's listening. Mm-hmm. And then there was this moment of clarity that was unlike clarity that I had before. That was one of those thought processes that was bigger than my own thinking is the best way I probably can describe that. And it took faith. It took me calling my wife and her saying, it's time. And we didn't realize until many, many months later that we had made the right decision based on what we thought that the Lord was. And so I think when God speaks to you, there's a faith component that is, you cannot separate the two. Mm-hmm. That because I've never heard an audible voice of the Lord. Mm-hmm. I've heard people say that, but again, that kind of freaks me out a little bit as well. but it was as crystal clear of a moment in hindsight that the Lord had given us a very clear path. If you trust me, mm-hmm. step out. Mm-hmm. And the neat thing is, I've shared that story many, many times with people in very similar situations, mm-hmm. And the result's not always the same. Some of them have been that their transition was to not leave, mm-hmm. Or not to take that step. And so, I think those moments are very personal and individual between you and the Lord, and it is not this big elusive. Mm-hmm. This mystical moment. It's this, all right, let's get real, mm-hmm. and let's get practical. And like I said, when I spoke at chapel, it was me and the Lord, and I drew a line in the sand with my fingertip. Mm-hmm. And so,
that's a powerful story. You know, I think Jesus also outlines that for us in his daily trek, you know, to the Mount of Olives to spend time with his Father after having spent time in the community of life. And the difficulties, you know, and the challenges and the successes and the happiness and the sadness and all that life gives to us every day. Jesus made that trek to that solitude place, you know, to say, hey, you know, I too need to spend time with my Father.
And, you know, I think it's important to say that I didn't realize in the moment that I was in the middle of a life-changing experience. Mm. Had I known that, I probably would not have taken that journey. But looking back, I realized that was a very significant marker in my life, that if I had not been obedient and willing, according to the scriptures, that I would not be where I am today. But again, in the moment, I wasn't fully aware that this changes everything. I just knew that something had to change.
Wow. I think that's a challenge in and of itself for us in a lot of ways, you know, that we don't pursue that moment of solitude just for the big moments. We pursue that moment of solitude for the relationship. Mm-hmm. And out of that relationship, you know, comes that the Lord speaking to us. Mm-hmm. So, hey, let's dig a little deeper. We just got a few minutes left on our episode today, but let's dig a little bit deeper. You told a story of a time when one of the clients who also became your friend passed away. And you know, this his dying was difficult, and you know, not like you would wanted him to have passed away, and it was a very emotional moment for you. So how do you balance and or deal with your own emotions when working with people in a cycle of poverty, abuse, and addiction, when sometimes the result isn't what you wanted? Mm-hmm. You know, the transformation didn't occur in totality like you wished it would. What enabled you to go back to work the next day after pacing, you know, at your house for a day and a half, trying to figure out all of God's timing and God's ways?
To really peel the layers back, it's one of those deals that the highs are really high, the lows are really low. When you're working with people like I get to serve with every day, and when you kind of pull all of the title and all the responsibility back, it's just a man and a man hanging out, trying to walk through life, seeking Jesus. I mean, it really gets that simplistic. And one of the things, you just mentioned the word balance. How do you balance that emotion? I don't know that there is a balance, because I'm more prone to be out of balance to the side of protecting my own physical and emotional and mental sense. But when you really start doing life with somebody else, there's just this automatic imbalance, especially when you're dealing with somebody that's battling addiction, because there's an up 1 hour, down the next hour, and it's, it's just this emotional roller coaster. And so I don't know that there is a good balance. What I know is what I had to say literally right before I walked upon the stage to speak at Lee Chapel. I asked myself a simple question: why do I do what I do? And Will Bright immediately popped into my mind. And I thought, this is why I do what I do. And ultimately, I think I will be eternally driven. Until Jesus comes back, I believe I will be driven by markers like that. People in my life that have really shaped my thinking to the point of, I get one shot at this life. What you going to do with it today? And so those are kind of the things that motivate me through that. But again, I don't know that there's a good answer of balance, because pursuing broken people gets messy.
Well, I think that you communicated well today in that idea that you're talking about, as we're sitting here unpacking this whole idea of caring for people, when you say love first and love most. You know, be an immediate caregiver. When the crisis hits, be available, love people, and then be willing to do it for the long haul. And what closing challenge might you have for people that are listening today that would say, you know, I'm struggling with my own level of addiction. I have people in my family that are struggling with addiction. They're struggling with loss of hope, you know, with a sense of abandonment or a sense of, you know, man, I'm out here on this island of life by myself. What encouraging words might you give them to help them understand that there is a solution, there is a hope to this these hurdles of life that too often trip us up?
I get to share very regularly the idea that isolation leads to desolation. Isolation is going to destroy an individual. So when you become isolated and you feel like you're out there by yourself, don't stay there. If it's a parent with a child, if it's a child with a parent, if it's an individual, isolation is going to lead to destruction. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I love to show people is when you reach out to somebody, how quickly you realize I'm not the only one. Mm-hmm. And so my encouragement, my advice would be, if you're in a place of that loneliness, do not stay there regardless of what it takes, regardless mm-hmm. of the cost. Mm-hmm. Reach out, find somebody, mm-hmm. Because I guarantee you there's somebody else that's been in that mm-hmm. same position.
Micah, thanks for joining us today on Servcast. Thank you for what you do. And, man, it's Lee alums like you that, you know, we celebrate every day and thankful that you've chosen to do the good stuff for somebody else's benefit and not your own. And we really appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure.
Join us next time in Studio 22. And until then, remember, you're made for more.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Servcast. The thoughts and opinions expressed on Servcast are those of William Lamb, Tyler Shores, their guests, and no one else. Until next time, this is Servcast, signing off from Studio 22.